The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 502, recorded on May 14th, 2018.
Second edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 335th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So, Scott, we all know what you've been playing.
Yep.
You've submitted a two-word review for it.
Oh yeah, loving it.
So, let's talk about it. Pillar of Eternity 2.
Yes, Deadfire. Basically, this is the sequel to Pillars of Eternity 1, and after you've dealt with the issues of the first game, you've settled down in your castle, and you're like just kind of, I guess, chill there or whatever, and then suddenly Eothaz, the deity that was killed in the first game, or before the first game started even, took possession of the giant Ardra statue, comes to life, digs itself out of its hole, destroys your castle, nearly kills you, drains the soul of everyone around you, and then just like walks out into the ocean. And you recover and are then on a ship, and you're tracking him down, trying to follow him to get your soul back and to stop whatever Eothaz is doing. And it's essentially a D&D pirate game.
Well, here's the thing. Obsidian is known for one thing, and that is weaving interactive and having interaction and, you know, your choices having an effect, and also who's in your party and what you're doing in your party and all that stuff has an effect. And from what I'm hearing, Deadfire takes it up to 11 on that regard.
Oh, yes. I think this is the first time that I feel like every choice I made mattered. I mean, people that I left alive or killed, it has consequences. One of my companions in the winter, in the White March, I found, like, she was a robot thing, and I found her torso.
Spoilers! And, well, that's fine. I mean, it doesn't really matter.
There is just a lot of stuff that it has cause and effect, and that comes from the game. And what's really cool about it is they'll give you an indicator about a character's reaction, and this is happening because of your choices from the first game, which is really a cool effect to have.
Now, here's the thing. 2 weeks ago, we didn't do this article. An RPG conference call. Oh, no. It was Reboot Development 2018. And Josh Sawyer, who's one of the people at Obsidian, talked about how the genre needs to be, quote-unquote, more radical. And he says that fans tend to skew towards the more hardcore cases. They tend to be fairly resistant to change. I don't want to paint too broad a stroke of it, but RPGs can be a lot more than we've done with them so far. There's so much more we can do and so much more radical. The genre can go in any number of different directions. I'm also contributing. He says he's contributing to a problem with Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2 being quote-unquote traditional role-playing games. But, you know, here's the thing is that, you know, when you have that mindset that you really ought to be doing something different, even stuff that you may consider to be just a generic role-playing game, they're affected by that, and they can be more. And it sounds like, you know, they have that mindset of, you know, we want to do something different. So they may be claiming that Deadfire is traditional, with quotes around my fingers.
Well, I mean, you do still have your isometric field view. So that's like Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale. But there are differences. Like in the first game, they dropped alignments. There are no alignments in the game, so there's no crutch to have your paladin cast Detect Evil. Okay, he's a bad guy, I can kill him. You have to judge these characters by their actions, by their words, by what they're saying, and not just, oh, he's a bad guy or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they probably got that from working on stuff like Fallout New Vegas and Alpha Protocol, which didn't have alignments. It just, what you did had an effect, and what you did you have to be responsible for.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And that's why he has factions. So you would have these groups, and you can't be friends with all of them. So you're going to end up being enemies with at least one, and you have to decide for your actions which one that's going to be.
Hey, TJ, does that sound familiar in New Vegas?
Yeah. I love that. Well, it is from the same pedigree. I would expect no less.
Yeah, I mean, I really... Yeah, Josh really does love to turn tradition on its head. He like in, I think in Torment, he didn't have any swords. He kind of like made fun of that cliche of
well, he had to
using
die.
Swords all the time.
He had to die in that thing. Game to move forward in Torment.
Yeah, exactly. So there are differences, but I mean, I think he does the three parts. You know, changing something, leaving something the same, and then doing something entirely new. So there are definitely new things, like reincarnation. I don't think I've seen, I can't name any other games that have this much reincarnation, the idea of it in it. I mean, there's a whole religions based on reincarnation of the wheel of cycling your life through it. And there's different deities that view the wheel differently. You know, some of them are...
Sounds a little bit like Androstan religion in Dragon Age, but you know, I still haven't played Tyranny, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And did you play Tyranny? I know that you were putting off Tyranny because you were playing.
It, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I played Tyranny. I also played the expansions to it. It was pretty good.
DJ, are you interested at all in Pillars of Eternity 2?
No, only because I didn't play through the first one, and I know that wouldn't matter too much, but at the same time, I love fantasy fiction. I love isometric, but I'm a little bit burnt out on the combination right now. It's one of the reasons why I'm waiting for Wasteland 3, is because I'm interested in... I've always been sort of a little bit more interested in sci-fi than fantasy fiction. I do love fantasy fiction, and I do love it in a lot of forms. I just like variety in my life, too, and I'm fickle.
Wasteland 3 is a different beast, though. That's being done by an exile, and they don't do the Obsidian thing. They do more recognizing what you've done. Like, in Wasteland 2, if you have a party of all female characters, the game will notice that, and you'll be barred from certain areas and allowed in certain areas, you know? But it's not going to have the interweaving narrative to the extent that Obsidian likes to do.
Yeah, because Wasteland 2, I'm under the impression you can change out your party as you need.
No, yeah, I'm just saying, you know, the makeup of your party is going to have an effect on how people react to you, though.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Still, I think that's kind of what I'm waiting for, just because I want a different stylistic feel than... I think if I was going to go back to a fantasy fiction isometric, I would probably go to... oh, God, what was the name of it? It came out this last year, and it was a really, really good isometric RPG.
Original Sin.
Yeah, Original Sin 2. And I really want to get into that, because not only because of the adventure itself, I think the thing that draws me to that idea a little bit more is the Dungeon Master mode, where I can, like, craft my own quests.
There's a lot of fantasy isometric games coming out. I don't know if you saw my tweet, TJ, but there's like Realm Beyond the Realms or Realms Beyond, and then there's also Black Geyser's game and the Pathfinder Kingmaker game. It's getting crazy.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned, by the way, Divinity Original Sin 2, because it's heading to Xbox Game Preview this week. They just announced the news of that.
That's good.
So it's getting a 3-hour trial. Excellent.
I'm happy to hear that, because that game is... I've heard nothing but good things about it. I hear the co-op is really fun. I hear that the Dungeon Master mode is really cool, and I've seen mods in the marketplace on Steam that just build the toolbox of that Dungeon Master mode and make it seem even more awesome.
Yeah,
but you're right. It's an awesome time to be a fantasy fiction isometric fan right now. Yeah. This is going to be a year packed full of them.
Well, here's the thing. You know, after being... I know that Scott feels a little burned from Fallout 4, you know, and I'm wondering how people will react to a Fallout 5 at this point. You know, if they're going to say, oh, great, or they're going to be, oh, I'm going to wait and see.
We better get an Elder Scrolls 6 before there's a Fallout 5.
You're not going to see Elder Scrolls 6 anytime soon, not with Elder Scrolls Online out there.
But before Fallout 5 is what I'm saying.
No, Fallout 5 is going to come before, unless they have a Fallout. You know, here's the thing. I'd rather see a Fallout MMO than an Elder Scrolls MMO, to tell you.
I think they're rotating.
Talking about MMOs here. Because here's the thing. Well, Elder Scrolls Online is just, you know, who cares? You have World of Warcraft. Everything's RPGs. You know, having a Fallout Online universe, you know, in which you actually have, say, you can trek across the United States, that would interest me a lot more as an MMO.
I'm not interested in MMOs. I'm totally burned out on them.
I know, I get
them.
That. I'm just...
That's why there's no reaction. I just don't have anything to add.
I've always been adamantly against the idea of Bethesda MMOs.
Yeah.
I mean, those are worlds that you bend to your will. And that seems lost if you put other people in that situation.
Yeah.
If I invited someone else in, like a Minecraft situation where I made a server and I could bring people in as I wanted, that would be okay. But
yeah. There is a certain appeal, though, to walking across a post-apocalyptic America, though, and dealing with stuff in that and having other people join.
Can you imagine that, though? You're in the you're in apocalyptic America, and there's thousands of people jumping around, doing little quest things and glowing lights when they level up.
Or it could be, you know, here's the thing. It could be it doesn't have to be an MMO. It could be something like a you see, here's the thing. I don't know. We're going to find out at E3 what Anthem's going to be like. But picture this. How about just a hub, you know, in major cities? But when you leave the city, you go into your own instance and, you know, it's barren except for you and whatever people you take with you because it's an instance. It's not a,
If it was balanced, right, with where other players going to show up, they might be able to do it.
I don't mean to get too dark here, but the reason why I go into a Fallout world is to escape the crowds because there's supposed to be ashes underneath my feet.
Yep.
You could always frighten yourself and play the VR version of Fallout 4.
Yeah.
There's some really nasty bugs that just make your head spin. If you've ever seen the Fallout 4 VR glitch videos, I suggest you go to them. You'll die laughing. Especially if you picture him seeing this in front of you happening, you know, in virtual reality.
Yeah, I can only imagine whenever you take a game that wasn't VR and make it VR, like just in its regular form, all sorts of crazy, cool, fun stuff comes out. I mean, we've all seen the videos for LA Noire VR at this point, right?
Well, we've all seen videos for regular Red Dead Redemption. Can you imagine if they had a VR version of that?
Oh boy!
Have a donkey woman in right in front of you.
I'm not ready for it.
What have you been playing, TJ?
I have been chugging along in Dad of War. They introduced a photo mode in a new patch this last week, and so I have been chronicling my journey. And my theme for it is best father-son vacation ever. Because you can change Kratos and Atreus' face to look just as jolly as can be. And so I've been using the photo mode and just basically snapshotting them doing selfies of themselves in front of all sorts of things like dead dragons and ogres and mountainsides and all sorts of fun stuff.
They have that in Middle-earth Shadow of War now with... I've been playing Desolation of Mordor, and basically with Baranor, they just gave up the pretense and just straight up made him Batman from the Arkham series. He has a grapple hook. He has a glider. He can launch himself with a grapple hook. There's a reason for that, though. He doesn't have any powers because he doesn't have a ring. He's just a normal human. So they made him Batman, and it's not even shy about it, which is fun, you know. But here's the thing: it has permadeath, in which if you die, that's it, he's dead, and you have to start over again. You don't have to start the skills in the single player, but conquering the region, you start over that again. So you'd be surprised at how far... I don't have any health potions. I better get my ass out of there and just try again later. Because if you die, it's frustrating. You want to throw your controller at the screen. But not in a bad way. It's more like, oh, damn. So yeah, it has that roguelike element to it. It was really fun in its own way. As a matter of fact, when I went back to playing Talion, I forgot I couldn't grapple hook or heal myself instantly.
So did you fiddle with the photo mode?
No. I just know it's there because occasionally it pops up without me wanting it to.
Hmm. Well, that sounds annoying, but I am wholeheartedly of the belief that just about every new game needs a photo mode, because even if you're not doing silly shit like I am, there's so many opportunities to just do cool stuff. I'm going to
start reminding you, Gary's Mod, Gary's Mod, Gary's Mod.
Gary's Mod? What about it?
I'm just saying, they're going to remind you. I mean, so many fun things to do with that. I mean, that's how Concern, the death and life of Gordon Froman, started.
Yeah. But, there's so many cool things to catch in photo modes, and I feel like if you don't put something like that in some form in your game, just where, even the most bare minimum, where you can just break the camera lock and move around a little bit and take interesting screenshots.
I'd like to see Mario getting teabagged by Bowser.
Well, I mean, if you had a photo mode in that game,
yeah,
you could.
Yeah, as I say.
Sky's the limit. Believe in your dreams.
As for me, aside from the DLC, I also found for $10 used Metal Gear Solid 5. So I haven't installed it yet, but it's right there waiting for me. So I'll be very late in getting to that game. I mean, 3 years late, but I'll see what any of the fuss is about.
Which game was it?
Metal Gear Solid 5.
You just started?
I haven't even started playing yet. I just bought the used copy for $10.
Ah.
And I didn't even pay for it. It was part of my gift card. I saw it for $10 and I shrugged and said, well, whatever. Why not?
How much do you know about the Metal Gear series?
Oh, I know a lot. I mean, I know the writing is batshit crazy and, and he's just... He cannot write, which is part of the charm. He doesn't know how to write one whit. He's like,
he can write. But he chooses to write.
He can write in the way a chimpanzee can eat a banana.
Well, I mean, he can write, and he can write intrigue, but he chooses to write in a way that is 50% intrigue and war games and very serious, and 50% pervy hentai.
And 40% conspiracy kitchen sink. I mean, I remember... Yachty talking about how there's this graphic scene where you have to take the bomb out of a girl from her stomach, and then later on she says, oh, by the way, I have another bomb, and she explodes.
Mm. Yeah, and then there are those weird moments where he just goes oddly comical and non-comical situations, and it's, yeah, I will say it's kind of all over the place.
And then you have quiet. Are you being funny again? What's this with this naked lady here who needs less and less clothes? Well, she needs it because that's how she breathes. Oh, yeah, then why does she have to stick her ass in the screen at you? It makes my willy feel nice. To be fair, there's a lot of homoerotic stuff in the Metal Gear series.
Absolutely. It was a huge plot point in Metal Gear Solid 3.
So it's sort of if you're gonna be pervy about the women, you might as well be pervy about the men too.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a character named Solid Snake, it's pretty much right there.
The thing is that he had I forgot his name. He's not Kamiya. That's the Bayonetta guy. But he has this fascination with the metal dude, and it's like, no one cares about him. Stop. You can make an entire game about him, Revengeance. No one cares about him, damn it.
Raiden? Are you kidding?
Yeah, everybody, no one cares about Raiden. He's like everybody a 13-year-old created him.
Everybody who went back to Revengeance loves that game. I can say that without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah,
no one cares about that character.
They didn't care about him in Metal Gear Solid 2.
He's like every early 90s Image comic all rolled into one, man.
They didn't care about him in Metal Gear Solid 2.
Then
in Metal Gear Solid 4,
shit to him just to make him try and make him cooler and cooler. Oh, look, he's now a ninja zombie or whatever, a ninja robot with half a face.
You got to give him another chance.
No. he can join the Rob Liefeld, you know, stable if he wants to.
Oh man.
I'm not convinced he's not already a Rob Liefeld character. He's right there, you know, with, oh, what's his name? Shadowhawk and Shatterstar and every other character with a name, with the word blood in their name. What was that character that was invented in Marvel? Jason Exterminator, the blood or something like that, and his mutant power was that he could make your blood explode.
Oh, I have no idea. That sounds like a deep cut.
It was just one of the worst. He had a trucker hat, Jason X the Exterminator or something like that. He was just really bad.
Yeah, the only cool Jason X was the one from space.
Oh, no, Brodsky was better. I like Brodsky. Brodsky killed him. Brodsky just stood up to him and just said, I'm going to take you with me, baby.
I think you're being a little hard on Raiden.
I like
KM
too, by the way. if she just didn't put Jason Fall onto a regenerator machine, you know, that was just bad luck. I like the way KM took care of him. just the evil smile that she likes to give. It's just, I could watch that scene over and over and over again. Just her just shooting up Jason before finally taking the machete and just tossing him into his skull. Yeah, I mean, Jason X was a good... It was the only Friday the 13th movie I actually liked, because part of it was like a parody of the previous Friday the 13th movies. Like, that they go into the Crystal Lake simulator, and there's two girls there topless. And one of them says, do you want to get high? Do you want to smoke some weed? And the other one goes, or have some premarital sex? And they both say together, we love premarital sex. Next thing you know, they're both in sleeping bags, and Jason's taking one of the sleeping bags and whomping the other sleeping bag. And inside the sleeping bags, all you hear is, ow!
I liked the new blood the best. Friday the 13th, Part 7, where Tina Shepherd psychics him to death.
Okay. I haven't seen it. It's like, I only like Jason X.
She develops psychic powers and pretty much tears him apart with him.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I was rooting for Freddy. Jason is such a dull bastard. So dull. He's just a zombie. Who cares about zombies?
He's a super-powered zombie that can appear wherever he wants.
You know what I want? I want Michael Myers to come out and beat the living shit out of him and say, this is my gig. I did it first. You get out of here. And then Buffy and Ash kill them all. Anyways. So we're going to move on to game news. And actually, you know, this week we actually have some nice big news. The first game news is id Software partnering with Mad Max developer Avalanche Studios to develop Rage 2. And this comes to us from Gamasutra. Rage 2 has added a fresh coat of vibrant pink paint to the infamously brown post-apocalyptic landscapes of Rage. But a more colorful tone and color palette aren't the only changes to hit the recently announced sequel. And by recently announced, I mean today. I mean, they've been rumoring about it for the past couple of days, and today they finally just decided, hey, you know what, it's real, it's coming. And there's going to be a teaser. While the first Rage was developed by id Software alone, it looks like Rage 2 is being developed in part by the Mad Max and Just Cause developer Avalanche Studios. This makes for a somewhat unusual partnership for a Bethesda-published game, since the company typically only publishes games developed by other ZeniMax-owned companies. While this isn't the first time Avalanche worked with Bethesda, they contributed to games like Prey and Fallout 4 in the past, the Rage 2 collaboration looks to be more of a joint effort than just past projects. The partnership between id and Avalanche was confirmed by the Rage Twitter account after a Reset Era user noted some fine print on the Rage 2 website that said that the upcoming title was, quote-unquote, developed in association with Avalanche Studios. Now, what's funny is that when Rage Twitter, they circled both Avalanche Studios and Bethesda and told the marketing department to stop screwing up. So I know you weren't that big a fan of Mad Max because it was very boring and dull and brown. But no one could ever say that about Just Cause.
So I've been seeing people over the last few days being like super hype and saying, remember Rage and remember Rage. I'm so excited for Rage.
Borderlands.
I'm so exciting for Rage, and I'm just like, yeah, but are you really? Do you really remember Rage?
The only thing about Rage that people liked was the technology. The technology was good. The rest of the game was so dull.
I saw the online promos for this when it was building up to today, and it kept being posted by Bethesda, and so people were complaining that no one asked for Rage 2. And that, they wanted another Elder Scroll from Bethesda.
That's silly because, you know, here's the thing. I did not like Rage. It was dull, right? But I also saw the possibilities, you know, and I said, you know, they could redo this so much and make it so much better.
Yes. And quite frankly, in a post John Romero and John Carmack id, I think, the team that handled Doom 2016 knew what they were doing. The team that handled Wolfenstein knew what they were doing. I think if either of those took on this, it would be worthwhile. I just don't get why everybody is pretending that Rage was great.
Here's the thing. Rage was competent. It did what it was meant out to do. I mean, if at first, it's like it took a long while for the story to even start. The problem is that it came out at around the same time as Borderlands, and Borderlands, to me, was a dull piece of shit, too. I don't care what people say. It was a dorky, but it did have a cel-shaded cartoon style that at least made it different.
And co-op.
But, you know, you can make anything. You know, Aliens Colonial Marines is fun in co-op. Anything can be fun in co-op.
So,
except for Army of Two.
So speaking of, you know, tired genres that keep doing the same thing, how is this different from Fallout 4?
You ever play Borderlands?
No.
Well, that's what it's like. It's a shooter. It's open worldy, although not much. Not as much as Borderlands. It's a shooter. And, you know,
I would say it's different from Fallout 4 in that Fallout 4 has always had sort of that, I don't want to say blocky, but like a rigid sort of RPG archetype to it since Fallout 3 came out. Rage is more of like, I mean, it's from the guys who made Doom. It's more grisly. It's more stylized.
Well, it's not only that. It's just that it's made to be a shooter. I mean, mm-hmm. You don't have VATs in Rage.
Yes. My friend invited me over to his house and told me that this was going to be the new Doom. And I'm not saying that he let me down, but eventually I did move halfway across the country away from him.
Oh.
Not saying it's connected, but...
At least he didn't say it was going to be the new Dark Souls.
Well, Dark Souls is just a third-person action game.
But it was a joke, because...
And that's what, you know what, that's the funny thing is that that's what I think people are doing. Rage was overhyped and oversold back then, and then it let people down. And now, like, years later,
but you know what?
People are hyping it back up in their minds as if it was so much better than it was. And that's really funny to me that it's kind of become cyclical that way.
You could say the same thing about the first Assassin's Creed. It was such a big disappointment and all that stuff. But they learned what they did wrong. Assassin's Creed 2 came out, and it was like everybody just loved it. So hopefully that'll happen with Rage 2. Avalanche will look at what worked and what didn't work, you know. And the fact that they use, if you saw the tweet and saw the page for Rage 2, it was garish. It was electric pink, which they're saying, well, guess what? That boring brown, guess what? It's gone. Mm-hmm. We're going to make this colorful. And,
Which is good.
Here's the thing. With the next news item coming up, you know, we could use a little bit more wild, colorful, not very serious stuff.
I mean, I'm glad because, God, I hate the desert palette. I do.
Well, it's, here's the thing. You know, Fallout 3 actually made it work, and so did Fallout New Vegas. You know, those are basically desert areas too, but at least they were smart enough to have these patches of interesting things, you know?
You get in New Vegas and it's just miles of neon and glitz and
that's
glam.
That's not true. Especially when you first leave. No, I mean, the first thing that you see that's different from the rest of the desert is that Ferris wheel and the roller coaster. No, at least they know that the desert isn't all dust. It has plants in it. It has desert flowers, and it has things in it, you know?
Yeah. What I meant was there is the desert thing about Fallout New Vegas, but you're right. There are things like the dinosaur town in Novak with the big old dinosaur looming over the cliff.
Now, I know you'd be a little bit worried because this is being done by the people who did Mad Max, and that was your chief complaint, you know, is that it was just empty, boring desert. But right. Just Cause was anything but boring, what's it called, scenery. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you know. And I get, for one thing, with Mad Max, they had to adhere to a license, and they had to adhere to that world.
That's not, you know, you could have always had bright stuff in it too.
I mean, well, you had Golden. That is true, but you also had Warner Brothers overseeing the project, and they're going to be the ones to tell them you have to do it this way.
Well, you know, at least they got the sandstorms right in Mad Max when it was just like the sandstorm that you see in the film Fury Road. It's like that threatening. It's like that dangerous. It's like, oh shit, here comes a sandstorm. We better get out of this shit.
I'll wait and see, though. Rage 2 can be fun. It can be cool. It'll be interesting to see what the gameplay trailer drops tomorrow, which will be a few days ago as of when this podcast launched. So we'll have seen what gameplay looks like in the game by then. I'll be interested to see how that looks. And I will be the first to say I'll give it a try. I just want people to stop saying Rage was good.
Yeah. Well, it's time to depress you now. Take the next item, PJ.
Oh, yeah. Radical Heights developer Bosky Games shuts down from Kotaku. Womp womp. Bosky Productions, the studio behind the recent battle royale Radical Heights and last year's Lawbreakers, is closing its doors. Pardon. The news comes from studio co-founder Cliff Bleszinski, previously of Gears of War's and Unreal Tournament fame, who said that Lawbreakers had failed to gain traction and described Radical Heights, which launched last month to some popularity, as too little too late. Bosky, founded in April 2014 by former Epic Games employees Cliff Bleszinski and Arjan Brucey, released the shooter Lawbreakers last year but failed to find an audience, thanks in large part to an oversaturated marketplace and the massive success of Blizzard's Overwatch.
Hold on. It was also because of the dickishness of Cliff Bleszinski, too. Let's not forget that entire PR disaster.
Yeah. He basically talked up his game by talking down other games, and
shat all over player unknown's Battlegrounds for one, which is a bad thing to do. Now you can shit all over that game now because they've been just as dickish lately. You know, you can't take Battle Royale. That's our idea. Only we are so allowed to do Battle Royale.
H1Z1 did it before anyone.
I know, but still, you know, it's like. Well, people have done it for a while. I mean, what the fuck do you think MAG was, then, if you're going to use that definition?
Hmm. That's true.
Except it didn't have the shrinking arena, but it was still 100 versus 100 and just batshit crazy.
Hmm. Brucey left the company in December 2017 to return to Epic, where he worked on the mobile version of what had suddenly become the most popular game in the world, Fortnite.
You know, I have to include the something from The Price is Right, either the loser horn or the winner jingle. You know, it's just that's just a whole bunch of irony right there.
There was also earlier this year, Cliff called out Epic for trying to poach employees from well, actually, I guess it was last month, poach employees from Bosky because they were because Epic was trying to get some folks over after Radical Heights launched. Ironically, Fortnite was first announced by Blazinski at Spike Video Game Awards in 2011, and it was Fortnite that Blazinski's new studio tried to follow, with Boss Key releasing the Neon Battle Royale game Radical Heights in April of this last year. Radical Heights felt early and unfinished, but it drew some interest, including mine, with the mega-popular streamer Ninja, even playing it for thousands upon thousands of viewers on Twitch. It wasn't enough to save the studio, but Blazinski says servers will stay online for the near future.
Yeah, at this point, you know, someone like Blazinski and something like Boss Key, I'm pretty sure they'll allow people to host their own servers.
Yeah. What I hope happens, there's promise in that game. There's a lot of things that it has that other that Fortnite and PUBG don't. Specifically, it's pure game show aesthetic. It's something that's always been my favorite part, and the favorite part of many others about that game. I mean, it uses like normal weapons, and that's boring. But when it comes to like anything that has to do with the game show aesthetic, it's over the top. It's funny. It's cheeky, and it's enjoyable.
You know, this game just streams open source. You know,
let
the fans have at it.
Heck, I wouldn't mind if one of the big dogs picked up the rights to it and took the foundation and ran the ball with it.
I think it would do better as a fan-run game, you know. Just let them go nuts with it.
Maybe so.
Go ahead. Hello?
Hello.
Who was going to talk?
You were. You were about to say something.
There's more to this story, though. Blazinski also said that he was stepping away from the industry to reflect.
He did that 2 years ago. What the fuck? He said that. He says that every 2 years. I'm going to step away from the industry.
Well, apparently he was citing some personal issues. I guess one of his dogs is about to pass.
Yeah, well, guess what? You know how Cliff Blazinski is lying? His lips move.
The issue I haven't even gotten to the issue with this. So after the fact, I have seen employees of Boss Key come out and say that the only way that they knew that Boss Key was shutting down was because of Blazinski's tweet today.
You know, that's typical, though. I mean, not just for Blazinski. I mean, sometimes the employees are the last to know.
Is that true? Like, this guy was the
sometimes it happens just like that, you know? That's how the Powerpuff Girls found out, the voice actresses found out that they weren't going to be, they weren't going to do the reboot. It's like, they found out over Twitter. It's like, what? Wait, what?
That's crazy and crappy to me, because, like, I'm talking about, like, the lead producer of the game was online today saying that his daughter tweeted him, texted him with Blazinski's tweet, and that's how he found out that Boss Key was shutting down.
You know, sometimes they make the decision immediately, and then they tell some new media outlet before they have a chance to tell everybody else.
That's a really shitty CEO there. This is sounding like Phil Fish. I feel like I'm having
Phil Fish is an entire kettle of fish. For one thing, see what I did there? isn't he a single person developer?
That's true.
Yeah.
He's just Phil Fish is just weird.
Yeah.
It's a pity because we'll never see Fez 2.
I just feel like really you don't send out like a company wide email before you make your tweet saying that the company is shut down.
You know, so here's the thing. In this day and age, you know, we didn't have tweets 20 years ago that could have happened a lot more frequently before, you know, because you didn't have the press, you know, on Twitter with you, you know. At least you'd have time to write the memo before you,
it's before still you unprofessional.
Called in the press to announce it, what was happening.
I don't know. I'm not giving Cliff a pass on that, only because I feel like it's really shitty for the industry people and the people that busted their asses on that game to suddenly find out that they're out of a job.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's what happens a lot in this industry. So,
but it's not okay.
Right.
Here's the thing. I don't care if they're not being abused, like they're being forced to work overtime and, you know, they're not undergoing sexual harassment and all that stuff. Being the last to know that you've been fired happens a lot in every walk of life, and it's happened to me before. So I don't care. Just so long as they were treated right while they were still employed.
I mean, it sounded like they were having fun. You can say that much about it. It sucks. Here's
the thing, you know, I remember that the people at LucasArts, or the team at LucasArts, when their game was for, you know, when the sequel to Knights of the Old Republic was forced out too early, you know, on their own time, they still hung with the fans and made sure the game was patched and completed with quote unquote unofficial patches. I can easily see the team just doing that with Radical Heights, you know, staying around while they're looking for other work and, you know, helping fans, you know, mod the game and make it better.
Yeah. And I will say this, Radical Heights is a good game, and it, for what it's worth right now, it's a good game for an early access game. It's not finished by any stretch of the imagination, but it had a lot of promise, or it does have a lot of promise, and it has the potential to be so much more. I would have loved to see them stretch the legs on the 8.
That's one of the
8.
Advantages, that this game is not a publisher game. It's published by the developer, Boss Key. Right. So here's the thing, is that you know how it is with large publishers. When a game gets canceled or an MMO gets canceled, they decide to say, fuck the fans, we're just going to shut it down. You can never open ever open it again, like City of Heroes or stuff like that. With this, Cliff Bleszinski and whoever may just say, here's the game, open source it, enjoy. That's what they did with Tribes, if I remember correctly. Remember Tribes?
Mm-hmm.
Tribes 2, they just said, here, it's yours, just do whatever with it.
Yep. They eventually did that with the whole series, where they just put it on a freeware site.
Yeah, and just said, go have fun. I think they also did that with Ultima Online, too. They have a special cards.
I think if Lawbreakers and Radical Heights had come out in a different time, they would have probably found a lot better success.
If Lawbreakers had been released with duct tape around Cliff Bleszinski's mouth, yeah, it would have done great.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big part of it too, is that like there were a lot of people. I've seen a lot of people today that have been dropping in and just dropping all these hot takes on them as if they knew. It's like these were people that didn't ever play the game and are calling it unimaginative from the start. These were probably also the same people that on day one of Radical Heights launch were review bombing the game on Steam because they were mad at Cliff Bleszinski, which I get why they were mad at Cliff Bleszinski, but Cliff Bleszinski didn't make the fucking game. So you're punishing a whole bunch of other people because you're mad at one dude.
That's what children do. These are children. There's a reason why they used to say children should be seen and not heard.
True debt.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Platinum claimed it will turn the action genre on its head with upcoming unannounced game from PC Gamer. Last year, Platinum Games told PC Gamer that it would like to bring all of its games to PC, but we still know very little about what it's working on next, other than the Switch-exclusive Bayonetta 3. In January, it said it was developing two self-published games that would sit somewhere between AAA and indie titles. And this week, designer Hideki Kamiya gave another hint about the studio's future plans, saying he's working on the game that will turn the action genre on its head. The unannounced title is still a close-guarded secret. A lot of staff at the developer don't even know about it yet, he said at Japanese indie game conference Bit Summit. He didn't give much away, but head of development at Tsuchi Inaba talked more generally about his desire to innovate and how he thinks Platinum's reputation as a developer that aims to create combo-based action games is a misconception, albeit a nice one. Inaba said that his team never intends to build games that are all about nailing satisfying combos. It just happens organically when they try to make something fun. Whether that means that in its next game will try to break that mold or not, who knows. The two self-published games it's working on are fresh IPs, which is a chance to start afresh, and the idea of turning the genre on its head does suggest a radical change.
Now, for those you don't know, they did games like Vanquish, which was a third-person Gears of War shooter, except with giant robot spiders. And, of course, Bayonetta and Devil May Cry and... You know, if there is a if there is a serious competitor to the God of War games, Platinum Games is it, because Bayonetta is so good, and just from a pure gameplay standpoint, it is incredible. So it'll be interesting to see what they do this year. It sounds like they don't want to do a, you know, Devil May Cry, Bayonetta, God of War type game. And maybe it sounds like they're doing another variation on the Vanquish mold, you know? And I know there's a lot of people who loved Vanquish. I didn't, but there's a lot of people who loved it because it was sort of like a new riff on the tired Gears of War genre.
I wonder if they're going to try to put Scalebound back together in some way.
I don't know if that's going to turn the action genre on its head.
I mean,
what if they make their own version of Monster Hunter?
That, or like, I mean, last year they flipped it on its head by doing Nier Automata. That they kind of went all over the, but that was more of a story based thing.
Yeah. By the way, one of the news items from a few days ago, which didn't make it, but Nier Automata is coming to Xbox One and Switch.
Good. You'll all be able to experience the true beauty of butthole graphics.
Or the music, actually. I think the music was the one that you were raving about. You gave it Best Music of the Year over Cuphead.
It does. It does have a beautiful soundtrack. It's really great. I just remember in 2016, we were all talking and debating about the controversy that was butthole graphics.
No, you were talking about it with other people. Scott, do you remember us discussing buttholes on this podcast?
I think we glanced over it with Overwatch a little bit.
I think you're misremembering. It wasn't – maybe you two were talking about buttholes. I don't remember ever talking about buttholes on this podcast.
No, I wasn't. I don't understand the fascination with the whole butt thing.
unless you're watching something like Bob's Burgers, then it makes sense.
For those who don't know – there was an issue when Nier Automata was being produced because the main character wears a thong all the time, and if you looked closely, there was graphics of coloration around her butt, on the inside of her butt cheeks, and it was like a big deal because who does that?
Bob's Burgers. Of course, they're animal anuses, you know.
It was the Bob's Burgers of Japanese action RPG games.
I wonder if they had
games.
A nightmare like she did. For those who don't know, just do a YouTube search of, I forgot her name, but her nightmare of animal anuses on Bob's Burgers. It is hilarious. For those who know, okay, here's the thing, is that her sister, was it? I think it was her sister, is a little bit crazy, and she does all this artwork that features animal anuses from rhinos, from monkeys, and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's considered, and they put it up in the burger store, and she is, and the wife is against it. And at one point, late in the cartoon, she has a nightmare of these animal anuses attacking her in neon.
Yep. But I don't know. If whatever they decide to do, you know, between Bayonetta and between Nier Automata, I think they've earned a pass to just sort of do whatever they're going to do at this point, and people will probably check it out.
You know what game I haven't played, and it's not because I heard bad. You know, I heard that the gameplay is excellent, and that's DMC. And I know a lot of people hated it because it was a reboot of Devil May Cry. But from what I understand, it had a gameplay even better than Bayonetta's. Including one part in which you have the city, and then you actually go into the reflection of the city and use the reflection on the water as your platform, and, you know, all sorts of interesting stuff.
Yeah, there was a really interesting mechanic in that game where you had one weapon that was like, it can mess with evil entities, and you had one weapon that can mess with holy entities.
Gee, that sounds familiar. You know, oh yeah, Ikaruga, except with that it had the black and white thing.
And with this, you could also use those particular aspects of those weapons to traverse different obstacles in the environment, and that was kind of a neat little platforming mechanic with it.
Did you ever play Ikaruga?
I remember it, but I never got around to playing it myself.
Okay. It's the only bullet hell shooter that I actually played and liked, even though I died a lot.
It was one of those games I don't
mind dying in because it was that colorful. I suck at it, too. I can't play Ikaruga to save my life, but I still enjoy playing it.
Well, all I gotta say is that if Platinum claims it's gonna turn the action genre on its head, I am inclined to believe them. Because okay. they haven't really effed up so far.
How would it turn arguably it on its head?
What, Scott?
In what way could it turn it on its head? I mean,
gameplay mechanics. I mean, look what they did with DMC. They took the Devil May Cry formula and changed it into something new. You know, while still maintaining the... Here's the thing. I'll give you an example. Middle-Earth games took the Assassin's Creed / Batman games and melded them and turned it into something quite new with the added thing of having Nemesis system. So you have that sort of innovation in which you take a tired concept, you know, a genre, and just make it seem fresh by adding some new mechanics.
I was just happy to find out that Yoko Taro keeps treats in his big, scary head.
By the way, I thought about using it as a news item, but I didn't because it's sort of it's not you know big enough for us to discuss. But the Final Fantasy VII remake is going to be scored by Uematsu.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that to look forward to for the Final Fantasy VII remake. Which everybody is salivating over. Emotional investment in the Final Fantasy series. And that'll do it to you when your first Final Fantasy is Final Fantasy 13. but a lot of people are excited. I mean, I love the music in Blue Dragon, which he also did.
You should give Final Fantasy 15 a try at some point. Yeah, it's the least Final Fantasy is. Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, because it was supposed to be Final Fantasy Zero. What was it? Final Fantasy. I know it was supposed to be a purely co-op game, and they changed it at the last minute to be Final Fantasy 15.
Right.
Type Zero. Final Fantasy Type Zero.
Right, and what it ended up being was Stand By Me mixed with a little bit of Monster Hunter, a little bit of a... There's all sorts of good aspects to that game. Plus, it just has a kick-ass story and the best Final Fantasy villain in years.
For the Final Fantasy villain of the controller? Oh, no, that's Monster Hunter.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you hate Monster Hunter's controls, you're in for a treat with Final Fantasy 15 because they're easy as hell.
I'm going to wait for Dauntless. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Redditor leaks potential Star Fox Racing spinoff from Retro Studios, and this comes to us from Shaq News. The internet rumor mill is churning once more, and this time it's revolving around Star Fox. A Reddit user named Das Verbigen is the source of a rumor that's now making the rounds online, claiming that Nintendo's Retro Studios is working on a Star Fox Racing game spinoff title. It's supposedly called Star Fox Grand Prix. Retro Studios is the developer of the Metroid Prime trilogy, and they'd be behind the Star Fox Racer, according to Das Verbigen. I would love it if that's German for the liar, if their claims are true. They describe their racing game as something like Diddy Kong Racing mixed with F-Zero. Quote, it'll have an adventure mode of some kind, think Diddy Kong Racing, and there'll be some boss fights and a hub that would be like it, too. It's called Star Fox Grand Prix. Not long after the Reddit post appeared, a 4chan user posted an image of the game's proposed logo. There's not exactly proof that any such game is coming down the pipeline. To me, the screenshot looks incredibly fake, but, you know. It also doesn't make sense that Nintendo would opt for a Star Fox-centric racing game instead of simply making another F-Zero title, but Nintendo's done weirder things before. So, whether this is true or not, and if this is true, it'd be announced at E3, would you want a Star Fox racing game?
Yes.
I would want a Star Fox Racing game in space.
Yeah.
Flying ships and whatnot.
What's the name of that game? Wipeout. It would be like Wipeout that Sony has?
Yeah. I like Star Fox. I always liked the characters. I thought they should have done more with that series as well.
I just hope
well.
It's not a cart game. You don't want a cart game in space. No. It has to be an actual... space Wipeout type racing game if you do something like this.
It's absolutely going to be a Wipeout type game if they do it. I'm going to say that right now.
Also,
let's just clear.
I just want to say, remember, the last Star Fox game sucked. So they may try something safe with Star Fox to reintroduce it.
Now let's be honest about F-Zero. Captain Falcon will be confined to the Smashverse forevermore.
What?
He's never coming out. Everybody, he's going to be Falcon punching people for the rest of eternity. And that's just the way it is. They're never going to make an F-Zero game. You know how I know? Because they haven't made an F-Zero game since ever.
I thought you were talking about me for a moment.
Oh, no, I was talking about Captain Falcon.
People are talking about me Falcon punching people. You know? That's why I thought you were talking about me for a second. It's like I said something bad about Star Fox, and now I'm going to be forced to be encased. That's something that actually Paul would say.
Unless you start wearing a scarf and helmet and dressing in blue spandex, you're okay.
Well, actually. You wouldn't believe how many people want me to dress like that for Halloween.
I don't know what it is about F-Zero.
Somebody.
I don't know what it is about F-Zero, but Nintendo has no interest in bringing that series back together. None at all. You can tell.
What was the last F-Zero title? I have to find out.
It was on GameCube.
Last F-Zero on the Super Nintendo?
I'm going to find out.
It was on GameCube, I do believe.
The last one was in... Oh, damn it. Let's go to... this is about the series. F-Zero Climax was the last one for the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, wow. Oh,
there you go.
October 21st, 2004.
Yeah. So that tells you what you need to know about it. They're just not going to do it.
The last console was released on was the GameCube, developed by Sega's Amusement Vision game. And it looks like it sucks.
Yeah, sorry, F-Zero fans. But, I mean, like...
All three of you.
Oh. Man.
Savage.
Well,
but, yeah, savage.
Yeah, I mean,
but
it's I don't believe the rumor. I think it's just made up. But you know, actually, I think this would be the smart thing to do with Star Fox, because like I said, the last one sucked balls, you know, and you know, you could do a rail shooter. You know, actually, they should wait until there's a real Nintendo virtual reality system and not the fucking Virtual Boy. But I think having a rail shooter like Star Fox in VR would be amazing, actually, because it would be built for that sort of thing.
Here are the reasons why I would be completely okay with a Star Fox racing game.
It wouldn't suck.
People have, like, okay, first off, Retro Studios, the folks behind it, that would supposedly be behind it, are the dudes that handled the Metroid Prime trilogy and they handled a heavy hand in Mario Kart 7, which, by the way, features the best Rainbow Road track out of all of them. Like, they kicked ass on that game. So if they were to handle it, they know how to do racing games, and they know how to do them well. As far as did anyone ask for this? No, but nobody asked for Crash Team Racing, Diddy Kong Racing, Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing either, and those games all kicked ass.
No one
asked
for a Pirates of the Caribbean movie when it first came out either, you know?
Yeah. Just because no one asked for something doesn't mean that if a game studio tries to make it, and it can't be good.
I mean, no one asked for Suda 51.
Absolutely. Nobody has ever asked for a Suda 51 game in any form. But they exist.
Travis Touchdown wipes out the big boner.
Yeah. So I have to agree with you, Jonah. I don't necessarily think this is true, but if it is, God, that would be awesome, and I would totally play it.
You know what's funny is, you know how ThinkGeek works, right? They have these April Fools thing, and it's April Fools. Unless a lot of people want it, then guess what? We're gonna make it real. I'm willing to tell you, if this is a rumor and people said, yeah, we really want this, Nintendo would look and wait, oh, wait a minute, people actually want this? Someone, let's make up a logo and just have some music to go with it at our E3 conference, but they have the stupid streaming thing. You know, just make up some mock-up shit and, you know, say it's coming out in 2 years on Switch.
Yeah, I mean, why not? If you have nothing else going on, make a Star Fox racing game.
You have a good counter programming to the kart games. I mean, you have the kart games, but they're sort of floaty and they're slow. You know, having I think if you had a Star Fox Grand Prix game, you'd emphasize speed. you know, and trying to make
not only that, but just like flying through the air and blowing up your opponents, because you'd have like leave the weapons on, do it, make it totally like Wipeout.
What, you don't want a blue shell in your Star Fox?
No, I just remember playing the hell out of Wipeout games and loving them, and I would be totally okay with if they just wanted to take the Wipeout setup and put a Star Fox skin on it.
You know, I think that would be a big middle finger to Sony too, say, hey, we're doing a better Wipeout than you. You're not even releasing a Wipeout. We're releasing this Wipeout, and it's a better Wipeout than yours.
Oh, God, I would love it.
Yeah. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Oh, fuck. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us on iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And we'll see you next week, and we will have our impressions of Rage 2 video. And, you know, I'm going to bet you if there really is a Star Fox Grand Prix, I'm pretty sure it'll be announced in the next 2 weeks or so. We are getting close to that time of year.
Absolutely.
So anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Play games, have fun, be cool, y'all.